can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey, and today our two films talk about some interesting competitions that evidently really do exist in the world. This is one of the things that always surprises me, is things that they have like competitions and records for that just feel really sort of out there, like whoever decided to make this a competition that I just always need to compete against someone in something for reasons. So the first film is Puzzle, which, if you couldn't guess from the title, is about a woman who's really good at doing jigsaw puzzles and ends up signing up to be in the national puzzle competition, because again, there are such things. So this woman, Agnes, she is played by Kelly MacDonald, and it's very strange. We start with her cleaning the house to set up for a birthday party, and she's very sort of shy and passive and doesn't really interact with people. She's just sort of going around serving them and cleaning up the messes they make. But then it turns out, oh wait, this is her birthday party. We're all doing this celebration for her, and she's the one acting like she's throwing it for someone else. And I'm just like, what are you doing at your own birthday? Okay, you're clearly telling me quite a lot about this woman just within this, you know, first scene where she's very, I don't want to say subservient, but clearly, you know, doesn't want to be the center of attention. And then she's given for her birthday both a new iPhone and a jigsaw puzzle. And as we clearly see, cares much more about the jigsaw puzzle than the iPhone, to the point that the next day after the party, when her son is trying to set up the iPhone so that she can use it, she's just like, why do I need this iPhone? And I can just call people from the house phone. And it's like, I don't want to have this phone. It's like having a little robot in my purse, to the point that I didn't even know for a while. I was like, what year is this supposed to be? Is this supposed to be like the first year of the iPhone? And it's clearly not. It's a, you know, newer model iPhone, but it feels very out of time. She feels very old fashioned and out of time, to the point that when she goes and gets on a train to go to New York to buy herself another jigsaw puzzle, she doesn't know the prices of tickets, because it seems like she's never been on a train in years. And so she thinks it's supposed to be like 8, and it's actually like 19. And it's just like, wow. Yeah, so I feel you're like 15, 20 years, you know, in the past from everybody else. But Agnes is married to Louis, who is a mechanic, and they have two sons, Ziggy, who works at the auto shop with his father, and their younger son, who's smarter and is preparing to go off to college. And they have this sort of very set up, staid family dynamics. They're all sort of, you know, this is the way things have always been done, and we're just sort of stuck in it, and we've accepted that these are our roles, but we're not sure that this necessarily makes us happy. And Agnes just randomly one day takes out this jigsaw puzzle that was given to her by her aunt for her birthday and sits down to do it and is really good at it and does it really quickly. And it's something like, it's 1,000 pieces, which you hear several characters throughout the film say, you know, oh, wow, that must have taken you forever, or that will take you several days. And Agnes can do it really, really quickly, to the point that when she goes to the puzzle store and sees an ad for a puzzle partner and goes and meets Robert, who is the person looking for a puzzle partner, and they sit down and do a puzzle to see if she's actually any good at it, he actually says, you know, F me, when he looks at the time, because he's never seen anyone do it that fast. But Agnes and Robert are both very interesting. Robert is played by Irfan Khan, I believe. And they both seem very not comfortable in the outside world. Every time Agnes comes to Robert's house, he answers the door by telling her what's on the news. There's an earthquake, there's a tsunami, there's a something happening, all these terrible things happening. That's how he answers the door. So clearly they both feel the outside world is this sort of strange, scary place that we can't quite understand, but we like puzzles because those can make more sense. Like Robert actually at one point says that he likes puzzles because it allows him to control chaos. And Agnes says that she likes puzzles because her mind's always going really fast. And so being able to focus on the puzzle allows it to slow down and focus on this one thing, and that helps her. So they clearly both are like the outside world, strange, scary, don't know what we're doing. Puzzles, that is something understandable, that is something controllable. There's clearly a lot going on metaphorically with these puzzles, that they're sort of, they both seem a way of like figuring out where you fit in the world, but also figuring out how to make the world make sense for these characters. But because Agnes and Robert both feel outsiderish, that's not even a word, but I'm going to go with it, and they bond over this sort of like, I don't quite get how to do the outside world, but I can get how to do puzzles, and we're spending time practicing doing puzzles for the puzzle competition, because again, there is such, and the people at this are serious. Like Robert, when Agnes first comes to, you know, audition, I guess, for this puzzle partner, he looks at the way she does it and he's like, no, you can't do it that way. You have to do it a certain way to make it faster, whatever. And then when you get to the actual competition, people are really serious about this. It's like, but you're sitting down and you're doing a puzzle. And Agnes's husband at one point does say, you know, puzzles are for kids. And I'm like, I mean, that was a little, you know, degrading the way you said that. But also, yeah, it's a puzzle. Why are we being all super like serious watching these people be so serious about this puzzle? I'm just like, wow. It would be fascinating to watch a competition like this just because of how into it the people were. Not because, I mean, I don't know that I'd even be able to qualify for this competition because I'd want to just sit down and do the puzzle and not be in a hurry. But sitting and watching the people who are competing, they're very intense about it. It's very interesting. But because they're spending all this time together, Agnes and Robert start to have a sort of relationship. And this is, for me, both like a major central part of the movie, but also a strange part of the movie, because this relationship is a bit odd. It feels odd. I didn't think we were going there at first. And then when we did get there, I didn't think it was going to progress the way it did. And then I didn't think it was going to go, you know, the movie was going to end where it did with what Agnes chooses to do. And I'm just like, okay, so I clearly need to stop having assumptions about where this relationship is going, because I clearly don't know anything. But it's very, I like Kelly MacDonald's performance in this. I think she does a really good job, but I'm also frustrated for her because Agnes does feel a lot of the time just too passive, even to her husband. Her husband at one point, when she has decided she wants to do this puzzle thing, she doesn't actually tell her husband at first. So she makes up this story about her aunt who has hurt her ankle. And that's true. Her aunt has actually hurt her ankle, but she says, oh, you know, my aunt has no one to take care of her, so I have to go take care of her, which is not true. And her husband doesn't want her to do this because, as he says, everybody always uses you and you let them. But then as we go on, we see that her husband, Louis, is included in this. He wants her to come down and do the books for the auto shop. He's upset, you know, when he comes home and he finds that dinner's not on the table, or his routine is changed from the way he's expected it to be, and that involves Agnes not doing what he's come to expect her to do after all these years of marriage, to the point that even her sons both feel as well that she just sort of not lets everybody use her per se, but doesn't live her own life. Her oldest son doesn't understand why she hasn't divorced her husband. He doesn't think she's ever been happy in her marriage. Her youngest son, we find through an essay that he's writing for his college application, says that he thinks she doesn't do anything but serve people and won't let herself come alive. And you do get that a number of times where I'm just like, just really, lady, just you know, speak up for yourself for once. Like, I want you to, like, actually not even be bold. It doesn't feel like this should have to be bold, but you do, after a while, get sort of annoyed, at least I did, with how often she just sort of, you know, shies away or doesn't tell people the truth because she's afraid of hurting their feelings. Or I'm just like, how long have you been married? Because clearly your kids are grown up. Your oldest is out of high school. Your youngest is about to go off to college. You're Catholic. So I'm going to assume you got married before you had kids. So you've been married at least like 18 years and you've not yet learned how to, like, you know, tell your husband, no, I disagree or something. And as the film goes on, she does start to get a bit more, or I should say a bit less passive. I can't quite think of the better term for that. She does start to sort of, you know, speak up a little more for herself, even though at first she does it in a sort of, oh, well, actually, I'm telling you this thing that's not true, but it does allow me to do the thing you didn't want me to do anyway. So I'm doing what I want to do, just not quite telling you. And then it gets to, I'm telling you, not asking your permission. And then it gets to a sort of confrontation near the end involving her and Louis, and involving her and Robert, but not her and Louis and Robert together in the same place, though all three people are involved in the decision that she comes to. And the ending felt very, I think you have to pay attention to the ending, because when I went and saw this, I got the ending because, I don't know, I heard things better. It's not said directly, it's said almost indirectly. You have to listen to things that are said around Agnes to get what's going on. But then the film ended and the people around me were just like, so wait, what? It just ended. What the heck happened? It just ended, and what is she doing? And I'm like, well, I get it, but I don't feel the need to be like, let me sit down and explain it. Like, I'm Professor So-and-so. It's like, I get it and I like it, but I also, even though I get what the actual ending is, I'm still left sort of questioning what's up with every other character except for Agnes in this film. We're not quite sure where almost anybody is at the ending. They're all just sort of left in a, well, I've maybe kind of come to a decision, but maybe haven't, or things have been decided in my life, but I haven't yet started wherever that decision is leading me. And it's just like, I feel like with the puzzling thing, this is probably somewhat standing in for something. And I'm not quite sure I get it, but it's not, you know, the wonderful fairy tale happy ending either. It does feel, you know, somewhat representative of real life in that way, of this is not the, you know, girl is picked on by rest of the world, girl discovers herself, girl grows out and totally kicks butt and happy ending for all. It's sort of like, so yeah, this is life, and it's not horrible, but it's not great either. And we end up somewhere in the middle and we learn to, I guess, be satisfied with where we are or something. But overall, I thought it was a really good film. I think Kelly MacDonald does a really good performance. Khan as Robert, also pretty good. The actor who plays her husband, Louis, whose name I've just forgotten, he's also pretty good, especially for his role, because he does feel torn between having these, I don't even want to say old-fashioned ideas about, you know, his life and his marriage and what that's supposed to look like, but this sort of set in his ways idea of them, and not necessarily being comfortable with change for that. There was a line even in this about, they have a vacation house out on a lake or something where they go fishing, where they bought that house, and when they bought it, the dad joked, you know, oh, we'll never have to think about where we go on vacation again. And then they later realize, yeah, that actually happened. Because we had a place to go, we never went anywhere. And that does feel a bit like how they went about their lives, of, I had something, I didn't have to go out and find something else, so I just went along with this without really thinking about whether or not it was what I wanted. And now we're getting to a point of things are changing and I don't quite know how to deal with this. So overall, really good film, good performances. Smaller, might be harder to see. I didn't even see any promotional material, for this before the film came out. But I did see like the posters for it in a couple of places, and I was like, oh, what's that? And then saw it was playing at my local theater, and I was like, okay, I'll give that a shot. Really glad I did, though. So we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second film today in this strange competition, whatever episode, is Populaire. This is a French film from 2012, and it is set in, I think, 1959, certainly late 50s, early 60s, but after the war, where there is a character, Rose Pamphile, who is, it comes up several times in words, at least, that, you know, she's a very clumsy girl. But I feel we only kind of see that like once or maybe twice. And it more just seems like it's not so much she's clumsy as she's just a bit like small town and uncultured. And she is definitely small town. She has a discussion at one point with her boss, Louis, that, you know, she comes from the version I saw translated it as like St. Hicksville on the river or something. That's not the name of her village, but that's essentially what it is. It's a small village out in the middle of nowhere, and she doesn't want to stay there and be married as she's expected to. She wants to go off and do something else, but she also feels very odd and not, I won't say not feminine, because she's very pretty throughout this film. I was just like, ah, oh, French in the 50s, oh man, okay. But just sort of odd and unlovable and not what she should be. And so she goes off because she doesn't want to get married and goes to this town that's at least a bus ride near her old town, so not too far evidently, to interview for a job as a secretary. Because evidently in France in 1959, being a secretary was seen as a pretty cool thing. There is a whole discussion while she's sitting in the waiting room for her interview where there are a lot of women in the waiting room, all for this secretary job. And there are two girls going on about what the secretary should look like and how she should act like and how to be a secretary is to be modern. That this was considered a very modern thing to be, you know, sort of cool and with it and the next new thing to be a secretary. Okay. I mean, it is, you know, post-war France and certainly not to where we are nowadays. So I'm like, I could get why that would be the case. And this is, you know, using what at the time would have been some of the newest technology. So sure. Okay. So she goes to this interview and she's called in and she's not dressed like any of the other girls who have come to interview for a secretary. Though again, I think she's just very pretty. So I'm not sure why she feels bad about it. But then she goes in and she doesn't really have any qualifications for this job. But as the man she's interviewing for, Louis, goes to, you know, toss her out, she says, please, I'm desperate. The only thing I'm good at is typing. And he says, typing is the base, you know, sort of the basics to be a secretary. And he goes to open the door to let her out. And she decides, I've got to show him. So she takes the typewriter that's on his desk and starts to type on it. And she types really fast to the point that Louis is hearing the speed of her typing and going, what is that? And closes the door and comes back to watch her type. And she is really fast, but more interesting, she clearly sort of taught herself, because she only uses 2 fingers. She only uses the pointer finger on either hand and types with those, but still is so fast that she like actually shakes her hair out of the ribbon holding it up and shakes her dress strap off of her shoulder so that her bra strap shows. And I'm just like, okay, wow. But this impresses Louis. So he decides to hire her. And we later find out this is because he wants to enter her in typing competitions, but she doesn't know that. She's just very excited to be hired as a secretary. She doesn't have to sort of follow her, I won't say it's follow her father's rules. She clearly cares about her father, but they don't really understand each other, and she's not what he expects from a daughter, and she doesn't want to be that way, so she goes off and they don't really talk. But she moves into town to be the secretary and is not very good at it. But she has a sort of falling out with Louis. He thinks, you know, maybe this isn't working. He sits her down to tell her that. He says, okay, I have an idea for something that would make you happier and make me happier. But he's not saying the actual term. So she thinks he means sex. And that is hinted at a number of times that this certainly wouldn't have been strange if that was the case. Louis has a friend named Ben, who is actually an American. And Ben is married to Louis's old girlfriend, love, whatever, Marie. But he still seems somewhat happy for them, and also a sort of pained way of, that could have been me, but I'm not going to be bitter about this sort of way. But Ben tells Louis even, you know, you don't hire a secretary to put her in typing competitions. You hire a secretary to essentially make her fall in love with you and get married. Not all secretaries, obviously, but that's certainly the much more understood thing than, oh, I want to enter my secretary into a typing competition. But Louis really wants to enter. He saw from the very moment he saw how fast she could type, decided, I've got to do something with this. I think she has the makings of a champion. And so he convinces her, if you want to keep the job, you have to enter this typing competition. And she does pretty well in it, but she doesn't do well enough to make it to the next level. They have a fight, they have a falling out, and she gets insulted at the ladies' house, hotel, whatever, where she's living. So she's about to go home feeling very upset and like a failure. She can't stay there anymore. Louis convinces her, you know, okay, let's try this one more time, but with training. I still think you absolutely can do this. So she moves into his house because I guess she can't stay in her ladies' hotel. And he sets her up where, okay, you have a training schedule and this is how you can type. You have to learn to use all 10 fingers. You can't do it with just the two fingers. And so they are living together and working together. And he's also helping to train her to become a typing champion. And this comes, it seems, from a bit from Louis's background. And this was the major thing I think that frustrated me, is we only get some of Louis's background and then not others. So we get later at a family dinner that clearly he feels sort of the lesser of the sons. His father makes a remark about, you know, this is why I didn't want to leave the family business to Louis. I should have left it to one of my other two sons because they have a better understanding or something. This clearly seems to be something he's dealt with before, of his father not thinking he's good enough. We get hinted at that he had previously been athletic. He has a number of trophies and pictures of him doing things like boxing. But then he says he didn't have the makings of a champion or something. But we never get why that is. We never get if he was injured. We never get if he gave up because of something his father said. It's not clear why he stopped competing when clearly from the trophies he was at least somewhat good at it. But this does seem to be one of the major things driving him to make Rose so good at being a typing, is like someone somewhere because of me is going to be a champion somehow. Rose is a pretty good sport about this. She goes along with it because she obviously doesn't want to lose her job, doesn't want to have to go back to St. Hicksville, but at the same time is also kind of falling in love with Louis. Even though she was very affronted when she thought he was suggesting they have sex, she was very upset. She says she's not that type of girl. She stormed out, and then she's upset with him right before he takes her to his house to do this training because they had the fight about, you know, her not making it through the typing competition. But somehow, some way, they start falling in love. And this is the main sort of plot line throughout the film. I think this film was almost, I could certainly see that it would be, you know, sort of promoted as not quite a romantic comedy, but along those lines, like not quite a American romantic comedy, but maybe a French one. I haven't seen too many French films, so I'm not sure. It's not like the romance is the sole purpose of the film, but it is like the major driving point of the storyline. She starts to fall in love with him. He clearly also kind of likes her back, but for a number of reasons, doesn't want to pursue that. he's just like, I need to train her as a champion and let's leave it at that. This can't go any further. And he doesn't want to exactly tell her why until, you know, he's sort of forced to. But it just felt a weird relationship to me. It's just for a number of reasons, but we're going to take a short break here so I can try and get my words together and explain why that is. So stay tuned.
The average SUV has two blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has two blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. We're still talking about Populaire, the French film about the typing competition champion. And there are, I think, actual speed typing competitions. It's mentioned when we get to the finale that this has been going on since 1920, which makes sense because that would have been about the time, you know, starting the jazz age when you would have typewriters and secretaries and so speed competitions. And at least at the competitions, by the time we get to Rose, they're all female and essentially do seem to be, you know, secretaries or people who were secretaries or people who want to be secretaries. There aren't actually any guys we see competing, so it's not clear even if they can. But the love angle for this film felt a bit weird just because it's got sort of multiple parts to it and multiple reasons why are you sure you're going into this with both eyes open sort of thing. So Louis is, we get, several years older than Rose, though she doesn't seem to care about that. It's not clear if he does care about that, but he certainly uses it as an excuse at times as to this is why this relationship can't happen. But then there's also this side story he has with Marie, who is played by Bernice Bourgeau. She's very famous for the film The Artist. She and Louis evidently certainly had a relationship before. But then Marie married Ben, who was an American soldier who came over, you know, to help liberate France. And Louis and Ben have become friends, and Ben clearly knows a bit about their past. But we do get hints at times that Louis is not over Marie. Marie seems perfectly fine in her life with Ben, but she also seems aware that Louis is not over her. But we're not going to make a big deal of that if we don't have to. But then she's also very fond of Rose. Louis goes to Marie to ask her to help teach Rose to play the piano because this will help her with her typing skills, I guess, with the finger maneuvering or whatever. And Marie feels not exactly comfortable at first about this, but then later feels very much on Rose's side to the point that when Louis even is, you know, being sort of stubborn and pig-headed about this and not, you know, wanting to pursue a relationship with Rose, Marie sort of takes it upon herself to put him in a position where he can't just ignore her by taking Rose to his house when his family's there for the holidays and announcing that Rose is his fiance. And I'm just like, that was bold. That was majorly bold. And what were you going to do if he was like, yeah, no, I'm not okay with that. But he thankfully doesn't embarrass Rose in public and they go along with it. And we see this relationship progress. But then he does something to make Rose think he doesn't care. And I guess this is maybe the main driving point, but it's also a major reason why I had a problem with it, is Louis doesn't seem to feel he deserves love for a number of reasons, partly because of his relationship with his father, partly probably something to do with Marie. We do get a conversation between him and Marie near the end about why, you know, she married Ben and not him, and why he didn't ask her at the time. But it just still feels like, you know, we're stretching this part of the story a bit. I kind of just want to get back to Rose. I find her pretty fun and interesting, even though at this point, because we've got the split from Louis, it's just sort of like, but all the things that made you, you know, this girl who came up from St. Hicksville to somehow get into this whole world where you wouldn't think you'd be, we've kind of stepped that aside because now we're into glamorous. And the title of this film, Populaire, comes from the typewriter that Rose ends up typing on near the end. It's not named for her, but she's sort of the model for it or whatever, because she does start winning the typing competitions. And then we get to the end, and there's a typing competition. There's the world typing competition involving people from all over the world, including the world champion who's from America, and her typing speed is like 500 something strokes per minute. And I have no idea how that is, because my typing speed is in words per minute, so I don't quite know how that translates, but I'm just like, wow. We see with Rose with her first competition where she didn't quite make it, she got to 358, and even then she still looks ridiculously fast, to the point that I thought they must have like CGI'd the typing in this film. And evidently they didn't. I found out later that the actress who plays Rose did actually train for like 3 months for this, and you do see all the typing, you see her hands are actually her hands, but I'm just like, that is really fast. It almost does not look real. But then the ending feels a bit because it's almost trying to hint like, oh, this is based on a real story, because we're going to show you something right at the very end that we, you know, haven't really explained till now. That's actually a real thing that later comes up. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't think this is at all the story of how that real thing came to be. So why do you feel the need to throw that in there? Like, it's fine that she's just a crazy fast typer and enter love story here because of course, but then also throw in real technical thing that later exists because why? And so even though at the end it is a sort of happy ending, this sort of trying to tie it into the real world thing just pulled me out a bit. And I was just like, yeah. But up till then, up till about, I'd say probably 4/5 of the way through, I really did quite like this film. I thought Rose was a fun character to watch, even if, again, I didn't quite get why she considered herself so clumsy. I was like, look, you're charming and you don't quite seem to know how to actually do your job as a secretary, but I don't think that necessarily makes you clumsy. Whatever. We see her like one time knock over cans and then another time fall off her bike. And that's it. That's all that I'm like, that makes her a super clumsy girl, that to the point that everyone knows she's clumsy. Okay, sure. And then because this film is set in France in 1959, I did spend a good amount of time looking at like the fashion of the film and just going, oh, they look so fashionable. Even when they're like, there's one point I think where Marie is just supposed to be around the house, just, you know, housewiving. That's not a verb, but whatever. And then we later see her where she's got rollers in her hair and she maybe is supposed to be like cleaning. And I'm like, you still look like way more fashionable than I do, like 90% of the time. I kind of just want like a runway show of the clothes that the woman in this film wear, because there, and it's, again, it's part of that sort of like French style thing that Americans tend to like but can't quite explain, that not quite je ne sais quoi, but that someone's just like, wow, yeah, France, this, everyone was so fashionable. Oh wait, there's supposed to be a story going on, but I just, let's go back to seeing all the women with the pretty clothes and the like not overdone makeup, but everyone has villas. Love it. Very nice. So overall, I thought this was a pretty good film. It is French, so there are subtitles if you can find it. I had a hard time finding it. I couldn't get it through Netflix, unfortunately, so I had to go a different way. But if you can find it, I do think it's a pretty good film overall. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.